Hi, I'm Beth Curtula. I'm the House Democratic Leader, and we're here today for our weekly press availability. With me today is our whip, Representative Chris Tuck from Anchorage, and Representative Garen Tarr, also from Anchorage. Both Representative Tuck and Representative Tarr are on our House Resources Committee, and that's why they're both here today. Last week, the House Democrats, along with Senate Democrats, rolled out House Bill 111 with the Senate bill as well to put out our plan for Alaska's oil tax future. We think our plan is a strong way for Alaskans to go into the future, and we focused on some ideas that we think are extremely important. And the first of that is we don't want to reduce taxes before we have an actual production increase. So we've built into our legislation ways not only to show that, but to encourage it. So for instance, we're encouraging new fields, which we must have on the North Slope, to progress. We're encouraging additional oil from old fields so that if a producer increases their production above a baseline, they can get a tax reduction. And finally, and maybe my favorite, is we're also going to encourage new ways that aren't tax ways to increase development and production. So those are three of the hallmarks of the new legislation. We're starting to see the legislature get very active, and we're hopeful that these ideas will progress, we'll get hearings on the new legislation, and go forward. And with that introduction, I'd like to get a few words from Representative Tuck and then Representative Tarr.
Thank you. Yeah, no, Resources has been very active. We've been hearing two major pieces of legislation pretty much simultaneously. That's the small diameter gas pipeline going through the state of Alaska, as well as oil taxes. We've been having a series of meetings where we're back to back, going from 1 to 3, again 5:30 to 5:30, and again 7:30 to 9:30. So we've been really hitting it hard. We've had most recently we've had testimony from the industry, and some things that stood out from yesterday's testimony is that Alaska is a great place to find oil. They have all agreed about that. And they've testified that all activity up on the North Slope really has been, all leads to production. In some way, some form. We can't rely on the old legacy wells anymore. We definitely need to get into new oil. And the more I heard about what the industry was testifying on yesterday, the more that I agree that our comprehensive plan, and it is a comprehensive plan, the Democrats' plan for refining ACES is really a very good plan. It really is. It encompasses everything that they've been concerned about. And what do we want? We want to make sure that we have fairness. And one of the things that our plan does is make sure that we have a fair share, continue to have that fair share, but at the same time, we are heavily incentivizing for that new oil and that old oil and more production from the old fields, and making sure that we have more competition up there. So the more I hear about it, I can't wait till we get a chance to get a hearing on our bill so we can really have the solutions move forward for Alaska.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you. Good morning. I'd like to just add on to what my colleague said. It's been long nights with the Resources Committee, but we're happy to be there and be considering these proposals. A couple things we heard this week that were important in terms of supporting our proposal that we put forward last week, and in contrasting to the one that's under consideration right now. We heard a consistent theme from the consultants that kind of indicated that oil companies need the freedom to take their resources wherever they see fit. That they would like to have that kind of freedom with their financing, and they want to be able to take their profits wherever they think is most important. And we know we're dealing in an international market, but it underscored the importance of the provision in our proposal that encourages investment in Alaska by allowing the breaks, the tax credits related to that investment. And so that's a really key component of our proposal now that's been reinforced by some of the testimony that we've heard. We really need to make sure there's a provision that will encourage investment in Alaska. We know if there's investment in Alaska, that means jobs in Alaska and hopefully more jobs for Alaskans. So that's one of the key proposals. And we also heard a lot yesterday about the importance of the tax credits for those capital expenditures. The capital credits are removed in the proposal that we're considering right now, and And we questioned that when we saw that legislation come forward, thought that that might be a wrong move. We considered that as one of the key elements that was encouraging investment in Alaska, and then that was in fact what we heard from the small producers who testified yesterday, that one of the things that encouraged them the most in terms of decision making about coming up to Alaska and investing those dollars here was the fact that those tax credits were available, and kind of indicated that going forward it would be much more difficult to make those same kind of decisions should those tax credits go away. So it was good to hear that two key elements of our proposal were supported in the testimony that we heard this week. Again, the idea that the tax credits are working and they are encouraging investment in Alaska, and that also we need to tie the reduction to investment in Alaska, because these companies are working in an international market, and we want to make sure that some of the investment stays in our state.
Okay. With that, we're open for questions. Anybody has any? Lisa?
Lisa Beamer, Anchorage Daily News. Just following up on the oil tax theme, and I'm just jumping in to this now.
Welcome back.
Thanks. Have you gotten any assurance that your bill will be heard? And separately, does it contain any measure, any provision for direct state investment in any infrastructure?
So we're in the process of writing our bill request, the formal request, but both the chair of the committee and others have said that they welcome new ideas, that they welcome other proposals. So I'm hopeful that we'll actually get a formal hearing, either in the House or in the Senate. And even, you know, that's my hope. Let's see the openness. Let's see these new ideas come out and be heard in committee. But no matter what, you know, a good idea is a good idea. So our bill is full of great ideas. So I think that no matter what, these ideas are going to rise to the top, because some of them are things we've talked about for a long time. One of them is, yes, there is an ability in our legislation to have ADA give the loans out so that new facilities can be built, and that's a key. That's just a key. We know that that's been an anti-competitive problem on the slope, so there is a proposal for that, for the investment for the state to give loans. Good question. Thanks. And Alex, Chris, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just want to add to that. Some of the big upfront costs that the new entrants have is on facilities. Before they can even start doing drilling, and then they can get into exploration. So that'll help with the new competition up there, making sure that we have the competition. And what we heard yesterday's testimony also is that this new proposal that the governor has put forward is actually worse than it is what we have with ACES right now. ACES has that heavy tax credit system that is actually benefiting. And like I said earlier, that all activity up on the North Slope will lead to production, especially when you're getting into the new fields. And they testified that the loss of the credits are far outweighing any of the benefits that the governor's proposal may have in it.
You're talking about the new players there, the independents.
Yes, we had
the smaller companies
that testified yesterday, and that begs that we're going to have to do a lot more work. And I think that our bill, once people see the solutions that we have in our bill, I think that we're going to have some hearings on it, some good solid hearings for it.
So can I just follow up? Or,
sure.
Are you hearing that from the smaller players, the new players, the independents, that they are satisfied with ACES and are faring well under ACES, and it's the majors who want the changes?
Well, yeah, we've had a few different testimonies yesterday, and we had one company testify that they never heard that ACES is working, and I clarified that I don't know where you've been, but we've had all sorts of publications. There's also been all sorts of news articles. Even the trade publications have been revealing how ACES has been working, and we've had the administration talk about how successful how ACES has been working for this state. And I did mention that I have to look at my notes from 2009, 2010, when we had this discussion before. I'm assured that their company was talking about how it was benefiting them. And if you look at the companies that we have up here on the North Slope, and we have over 60 new companies since ACES has been passed. And we also heard testimony yesterday that Our goals for Alaska are being carried out underneath the ACES program. We are going after new oil. We are having more activity going up there. We have the highest record employment that we've ever seen up on the North Slope, and we've seen more drilling activity. So that's all beneficial to get more production down the line.
Alex.
Mine was actually a similar question to the question that Lisa DeMar just asked Alexander Gutierrez with APRN. I'm assuming that you're speaking of Armstrong Oil and Gas and you're referring to a specific company. I was just wondering if any of the rest of you kind of wanted to clarify how Bill Armstrong's opinions in writing and in testimony yesterday kind of square up with your saying that this is that your refinement of ACES is better for the small producers.
Representative Tarr, you want to make a further comment?
Sure. I think we heard from most of the small producers yesterday that some of the provisions of ACES work better for them than what is the provisions in the new proposal that's under consideration right now. So hopefully we'll have an opportunity to have that discussion. I know we have a lot more testimony coming up, and then hopefully there'll be ample time for committee discussion at the pace we've been moving. Sometimes things have been happening a little more quickly than we'd like to see things happening, and hopefully we'll slow down a little bit once we've had some more testimony and talk a little bit more about that.
Any follow-up, Alexander?
No.
Okay, then I've got Matt, and then I'll come back to you, Adam. Matt?
One of the things we heard yesterday, or Matt Buxton for the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, one of the things we heard yesterday from almost all the producers is that they're looking for long-term fiscal certainty, and I think Mr. Keithley said something along 15 to 20 years, something like that. Is there any way that Alaska can do that? I mean, isn't there we passed ACES in 2006. We're back at the table now. Is there a way that Alaska, do you believe Alaska can provide some sort of long-term plan that we won't change in a couple years?
Do you want to go first?
And I think that our proposal does exactly that. We have been listening. We've been listening to the industry. We've been listening to the public. And what we've done is we've taken the existing tax structure that we have right now and just refined it and made it better. And I think that that's the kind of changes that the industry would like to see. At the same time, we're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We are keeping consistent, and we're giving them that dependability, if you will. I will have to say that making major changes, as the governor's bill does now, is actually creating uncertainty, because why do something this year if you can get something different next year? And so, or if it's going to just totally change on you. So I think that just even talking about it is a danger. However, through the talks that we've had, we are making it better.
I'm sorry, Matt, go ahead and follow.
Is there any way that we can guarantee, or you can guarantee that? I mean, that was sort of the concern that they were asking us to enter into contracts, yeah, and stuff like that. Is that something you can do?
One legislature can't bind another. That's, just one of our strong constitutional requirements. But having said that, our plan builds on where we've been going and making the kind of tweaks that we can say make sense and that we've heard are necessary. And, the companies may always come in and want more and more and more. But I think stability is an important thing, and that's where we're going with our plan, rather than a radical upturn, which is what the governor's bill would do. So with that, Adam.
Let's switch gears to education.
Okay.
Adam Pinsker, KTUU. This joint Senate Resolution 9 on the opening up the conversation to school vouchers. Have you guys studied that at all, and what are your thoughts on it?
We have studied it, and my thought is the Constitution says we've got to have a strong education system for all Alaskans. So I think that we've got to have, that kind of fundamental system, and I disagree with what's happening in that resolution to upend it and basically take away the kinds of funding and support that our public education system needs is not right. Anybody? Okay. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Mark Miller from Juneau Empire. Just following up on that. What's wrong with the idea of the voters getting to revisit this provision that a lot of people have raised objection to? What's wrong with the voters getting to decide?
Our Constitution is really clear about the fact that we do not put public resources into other schools and public schools. And we've had, you know, we've had problems in education and public funding in Alaska. So to do something like this could really devastate our public school system. So I think that it's not a good way to go. I think that we've got to be sure all Alaskans have that support. There's nothing wrong with a family or an individual putting their own resources to send their child wherever they want. What the problem is when you start talking about the public funding going there. That's the issue. Other questions? Other issues? Lisa, and then Pat and Alex.
I'll follow up on that, on the school voucher issue. Do you know of any research into other states where vouchers are in place and whether what the effect has been?
You know, I went home last night with a thick pile of information on exactly that point. I'm sorry to say I didn't make it all the way through it, but yes, there is that research, and I cannot remember the state where it was instituted to devastating result for the public and public schools, and I can get you that information. Yeah, that information is out there. I think it was Pat, and then back to Alexandra.
The cruise ship wastewater bill is supposed to be up in the Senate today. That kind of went through the House pretty quick. If it were to get amended in the Senate and come back to the House, is there sentiment to accept changes?
Yeah, record speed. And I want to comment just quickly on that. You've heard about the incredible schedule already going on in resources, double bills, hearings, you know, all day long. And then the cruise ship bill, which I think had all of, what, four hours of hearings in the House, and that's really unconscionable. This legislature passed about a decade ago the strongest cruise ship law in probably the world, except for Sydney Harbor, which had always not allowed dumping for two decades. But to take that law and move backward, making us behind 20-some other states, is really embarrassing. I mean, California just pushed the ships 3 miles out into federal waters. So to put Alaska behind California in terms of water quality with the cruise ships is truly wrong. So I think that hopefully the Senate does the right thing, amends to allow a time period to allow the ships come up, if that's what they really need to do, or turns it down altogether, which may be procedurally the only choice at this point. But if it does come back to the House, you know, my hope is that people have thought a little harder about this by now, and I know that they have gotten more information about the problems with loading, with copper, with what happens with these supposed moving mixing zones that no one can model nor really describe what happens. So my hope is, yes, that that comes back and that the House, or that it fails altogether. It really, you know, at this point, that may be what has to happen because the industry wouldn't work and wouldn't compromise at the beginning.
And during those 4 hours of hearings in the House, did the cruise ship companies themselves ever testify? Did they ever come and ask for this?
Yes.
No, we never heard from the cruise line industry themselves. We heard from Resource Development Council. We heard from the Alaska Chamber of Commerce, but we did not hear from any cruise lines personally.
We did hear from John Binkley's group, the Cruise Ship Association of Alaska, via letter, but they didn't come for public testimony.
And Alexandra, were you next? Okay, go ahead.
Hi, Alexandra Gutierrez-Baker. Representative Tucky signed on as a co-sponsor of HB 69 last week, and I was just wondering if you might explain your reasoning for that.
Well, you know, I think Alaska's got some pretty fair gun laws right now. We have a subsistence lifestyle that still exists throughout rural Alaska. We've been the forerunner, if you will, in gun laws. We've allowed people who own guns to be able to conceal and carry. And I think that this would be more of a state issue, more than the federal government coming down mandating. Our situation's unique than other states, and we just want to maintain that freedom to make the best decisions for ourselves.
And does the constitutionality aspect trouble you?
Any constitutionality troubles me. And you know, one of the things I'd like to focus on for any type of constitutional challenge is making sure that we have local hire for Alaskans. I mean, that's one thing I think that we should move forward. But any time that states exercise their rights, there's always going to be that question.
And does are we seeing any support for HB 600 from other members of the caucus then, or is it just me right now?
I haven't gone around preaching to everybody. But, you know, we're a non-binding caucus. That's a beautiful thing about us. We're able to speak our own minds, and fortunately, they've allowed me to speak mine.
Yep. Other questions?
This is one hand.
Everybody. Oh, well, let's see, Mark. I'm sorry. Pat's head is blocking me.
Yeah, I'm Mark Miller from Juneau Empire. I asked the House Majority Caucus about this last Friday. There is a recent poll that came out from Public Policy Polling earlier this month showed, I believe it was 67% of respondents in Alaska favor some form of legal recognition for same-sex couples, 30% oppose it altogether. And I was wondering, is the caucus supportive of the idea of having legal same-sex unions in Alaska?
Now, this is really a civil rights question, and people deserve to live with whomever they want, and yes, I think that people deserve that right. And there's no, you know, two ways about it. These are humans and deserve to have human relationships, and we support that. Okay?
Would you consider introducing?
We haven't discussed that. I personally would be happy to do that. I strongly, strongly believe in this right. Other questions? Pat?
Any progress on rounding up support for coastal management? I understand Representative Osterman had been looking at something. Is that the direction you would go, working with him on that?
I'll work with anybody that wants to see a strong permitting situation with coordination and input from local communities. It is setting back development in Alaska to not have a coastal zone program. And we're seeing it across the board from the small developers, home builders here in Southeast, who talked to me about the fact that now they've got to go to four or five different agencies, and God forbid one of them disagrees with another, which happens all the time, and the problems that are occurring because of a lack of a program. You know, we're talking a lot about the development on the Outer Continental Shelf. Without a coastal zone program, Alaska has no direct say in that development. And that's just wrong. To be the only coastal state, and we are America's coastline. We have five times the coastline of the rest of the United States. I mean, not to have a coastal zone program that allows Alaskans the kind of say against the federal government is just terrible. So I'm willing to work with anybody. And we're talking about it. It may be going a little more slowly than I would like, but we continue to talk about it. So slow, but still there. And in the long run, Alaska is going to have a coastal zone program. And that will happen. It will just be how much do we have to hurt before it does. Go ahead, Matt.
Last week, the major producers announced their next step in the scoping of the major pipeline. Any of you want to offer your take on what we saw last week? Is it promising to step forward, or is it a...
No, I think that the governor making these benchmarks is a good thing. I mean, we need to rely on movement going forward on a gas pipeline. And I think Alaskans would rather have a large diameter, making sure that we have affordable energy for Alaskans first. We have five takeoff points that's being proposed, a 42-inch line, anywhere from 3 to 3.5 billion cubic feet a day. I think that is better defining our future right there by having these goals being spelled out. So I hope that we can get the producers to continue working along with TransCanada to get a gas pipeline going from the state of Alaska. I'm proud that that they have been meeting the governor's deadlines on that. We still got a ways to go, and we got to make sure that we have our gas go in the markets. There's some negotiations going on. We have the Japanese industry consortium that's been put together to come over and solicit our natural gas from us. And this is all promising. This is all looking good. At the same time, we have a lot of activity that's going on in the Cook Inlet. We've heard from the producers down there. We even heard a little bit of the testimony yesterday underneath the oil taxes. But we have one producer that's actively down there, and they're paving the way. They're paving the way for our future, and this is a good thing for Alaska.
Are you concerned at all about the lack of detail in the announcement, lack of specifics?
One of the hard parts about anything that it does with oil and gas is getting details. You know, with a lot of stuff is proprietary, a lot of it's confidential, a lot of it's through negotiations. But what we do have is we have three producers combined with one of the largest pipeline builders in North America working together. And the fact that they've come to agreement to give us what they've given us so far is a huge step.
We might have time for one last question. Okay. With that, then, I'm going to thank you guys for being here. Thanks for watching from home. Write us, email us, call us. We're open, accessible, and we want to hear from you. And thank you very much for tuning in today. We're done.